What turns on a killer is the suffering and death of another human being. And as his determination builds to take another life, he plans in obsessive detail what props he'll bring, what knots he'll tie. Let me ask you guys something. What turns you on?
Welcome to Canvas and Crime, your ultimate destination for true crime and horror merchandise. Meet Elizabeth, the creative force behind canvasandcrime.com. She combined her passion for painting with her fascination for true crime and horror, giving birth to this unique shop.
You're looking for an intelligent white male, 20 to 30 years old, socially functional.
Are you a fan of serial killer memorabilia? You're in luck. Canvas and Crime has an incredible selection, from iconic mugs featuring notorious figures like Ted Bundy and the Zodiac Killer, to killer shot glass sets that showcase your favorite serial killers.
All I know to do is change your locks, tighten up your security, and pray.
But that's not all. You can also find custom prints of your most loved serial killer, adding a personal touch to your collection. For the most entertaining serial killer merchandise, look no further than canvasandcrime.com. Support a small business and dive into the chilling fun. Shop today, and don't forget to follow Canvas and Crime on YouTube as well.
Hey everyone, it's Albert Parker here. I'm the host of the new Hollywood Hustle podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Welcome to the show where we stop gawking at red carpets and start following the money. We dive deep into the financial secrets that keep Hollywood thriving. Not gossip, not just celebrity dirt, real structures, real cash flows, the corporate chess moves that decide what gets greenlit and what gets buried. Who actually owns Hollywood? Who makes the real money? And who's just along for the ride? So what makes Hollywood Hustle stand out? We don't just report headlines, we unpack them. Now, how do you listen? Hollywood Hustle Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For ad-free episodes, be sure to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
I love you.
I know.
Here's Johnny.
Say hello to my little friend.
Hey, Albert Parker here, host of Hollywood Hustle. We dig into the money, the power plays, the deals that get films made, and get them on your screen. Quick one for the movie lovers in our audience. Robbie Reviews Podcast.
I feel the need for speed.
A podcast that acts like that one movie-obsessed friend who actually knows what they're talking about. Robbie isn't just a fan. He cares about the craft, the storytelling, the way a director uses sound or a cut to land an emotion.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
So you get clear guidance on whether a movie is worth the time.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Robbie Reviews Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms, wherever you get your shows. But if you want a smooth, uninterrupted listening experience, you can subscribe for ad-free episodes at LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Welcome to the Limitless News Coverage Podcast, your premier destination for unbiased news. Your host, Maya Sinclair, brings you the latest and most significant global headlines along with national news and entertainment updates. Tune in as she covers the stories that matter most.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Limitless News Coverage Podcast. I'm Maya Sinclair, and as we navigate through one of the most consequential weeks of 2026, I'm bringing you comprehensive coverage of the stories that shaped our world from Monday, June 15th through Sunday, June 21st. This week witnessed historic diplomatic breakthroughs, ongoing international conflicts, significant domestic policy debates, and cultural moments that captured the attention of millions. From the halls of power in Washington to the streets of cities across America and around the globe, these are the stories that defined the third week of June 2026. Monday, June 15th, 2026, began with breaking news from the Middle East that would set the tone for one of the most dramatic diplomatic weeks in recent memory.
Vice President J.D. Vance made an unexpected appearance on morning news programs to announce that the Trump administration was preparing to release details of a memorandum of understanding aimed at ending the protracted conflict with Iran. Speaking from the White House, Vance indicated that the full text of the agreement would be made public within days, though he remained tight-lipped about specific provisions. The announcement came as a surprise to many foreign policy observers, who had been tracking escalating tensions between Washington and Tehran for months. The conflict, which had drawn in regional powers and threatened global oil supplies, had reached a critical juncture. Vance's comments represented the first public acknowledgement that substantive negotiations had been taking place behind closed doors. However, the optimism surrounding potential peace was immediately tempered by pushback from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In his first public remarks since rumors of the U.S.-Iran negotiations surfaced over the weekend, Netanyahu made clear that Israel would not be bound by any agreement to which it was not a party. Speaking from Jerusalem, the Israeli leader emphasized what he called his life's mission to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, stating unequivocally that he would continue this fight regardless of any bilateral agreement between Washington and Tehran. Netanyahu's defiance posed an immediate challenge to American diplomatic efforts. The Israeli military maintained a significant presence in southern Lebanon, where it had been conducting operations against Iranian-backed forces. Any comprehensive peace agreement would necessarily require coordination with Israeli forces, and Netanyahu's public statement suggested that such coordination would not be forthcoming. Regional analysts warned that Israel's refusal to participate in the peace process could undermine the entire framework before it was even formally announced. The situation in Lebanon itself remained precarious. Civilians who had fled their homes during months of fighting were beginning to return to devastated villages in the south, hoping that the ceasefire rumors might hold. In the village of Tuline, residents used excavators to search through the rubble of destroyed homes, looking for the remains of loved ones who had not made it out before the fighting intensified. The human cost of the conflict was evident in every shattered building and every grieving family. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi added another layer of complexity to the diplomatic picture when he issued a stern warning from Tehran. Speaking to state media, Araghchi made clear that Iran would consider any continued Israeli military operations in Lebanon to be a direct violation of the interim agreement with the United States. This statement revealed that some form of understanding had indeed been reached between Washington and Tehran, even as the details remained classified. Araghchi's comments also highlighted the fragility of whatever agreement existed, with implementation dependent on actions by third parties over whom neither the United States nor Iran had complete control. On the domestic front, Monday brought revelations that would reignite fierce debates over immigration policy and executive power. The New York Times published excerpts from an upcoming book by reporters Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan, titled Regime Change: Inside the Imperial Presidency of Donald Trump. The excerpts revealed that White House officials had engaged in serious discussions about suspending habeas corpus rights for immigrants and asylum seekers. According to the reporting, White House Staff Secretary Will Scharf had written a confidential memo to Chief of Staff Susie Wiles expressing his opposition to a plan championed by senior Trump advisor Stephen Miller. Miller's proposal would have effectively suspended the constitutional right of immigrants to challenge their deportations in federal court, allowing the administration to bypass judicial oversight in removal proceedings. Scharf's memo argued that such a move would be legally dubious and politically explosive, potentially triggering a constitutional crisis. The revelations sparked immediate outrage from civil liberties organizations and immigration advocates. The American Civil Liberties Union issued a statement calling the discussions a direct assault on fundamental constitutional protections that have existed since the founding of the Republic. Legal scholars noted that habeas corpus, often called the Great Writ, has been suspended only a handful of times in American history, most notably during the Civil War. The idea of suspending it for a specific class of people based on their immigration status represented an unprecedented expansion of executive power. The Times reporting also revealed that Vice President Vance had pushed to invoke the Insurrection Act in January, just days after a tragic incident in Minnesota where federal immigration agents shot and killed Alex Preddy, an intensive care nurse. The Insurrection Act, which allows the president to deploy military forces domestically, had been a subject of controversy during Trump's first term. The revelation that Vance had advocated for its use in response to protests over an immigration enforcement incident raised serious questions about the administration's approach to civil unrest and the role of the military in domestic affairs. Congressional Democrats immediately called for hearings on the matter. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler announced that his committee would investigate the extent of these discussions and whether any concrete steps had been taken to implement such policies. The American people deserve to know if their government seriously considered suspending constitutional rights, Nadler said in a statement. These revelations are deeply troubling and demand immediate congressional oversight. Monday also brought news of ongoing protests at immigration detention facilities across the country. The Immigrant Defenders Law Center reported that Keon Shaquille Suaso, a Belizean immigrant who had been leading a hunger strike at the Adelanto ICE detention facility in California, had been abruptly deported. According to advocates, Suaso was transferred without notice through multiple facilities in Texas and Louisiana before being removed from the country. The timing of Suaso's deportation raised serious concerns about retaliation against detained immigrants who speak out about conditions in detention. Just days before his transfer, Suaso had participated in a meeting with members of Congress and his legal team, detailing what he described as inhumane conditions at Adelanto. The facility, operated by the for-profit GEO Group, had been the subject of numerous complaints and investigations over the years. Suaso's deportation did not end the protests, however. At the Delaney Hall ICE facility in Newark, New Jersey, also operated by GEO Group, a labor and hunger strike that had begun nearly a month earlier continued. Detained immigrants were demanding better food, medical care, and treatment by facility staff. The protests had drawn support from advocacy organizations and some local elected officials, but ICE maintained that the facilities met all required standards. On a lighter note, Monday saw Kansas City preparing for its role as a host city for the FIFA World Cup 2026. The city was buzzing with excitement as it prepared to welcome international teams and fans from around the world. Kansas City Stadium was set to host 6 matches during the tournament, with the first scheduled for Tuesday, when Argentina would face Algeria. The economic impact of hosting World Cup matches was expected to be substantial. Hotels throughout the Kansas City metropolitan area were fully booked, restaurants were preparing special menus, and local businesses were decorating their storefronts with flags from participating nations. The Kansas City Convention and Visitors Bureau estimated that the 6 matches would bring hundreds of millions of dollars in economic activity to the region. 4 national teams, Algeria, Argentina, England, and the Netherlands, had selected the Kansas City area for their training camps during the tournament. Both soccer-specific stadiums in the city would serve as training sites, giving local fans the opportunity to watch world-class players prepare for their matches. Sporting Kansas City, the city's Major League Soccer franchise, was playing a key role in organizing World Cup-related activities, including a Soccer Capital Summer Festival at Sporting Park. The arrival of the Argentina national team generated particular excitement. Argentina, led by a new generation of stars following the retirement of Lionel Messi, was among the favorites to win the tournament. Sporting Kansas City announced a special meet-and-greet event at No Other Pub in the Power and Light District, featuring Argentine football legend Sergio Goycochea. The free event was open to fans of all ages and was expected to draw large crowds. Tuesday, June 16, 2026, saw world leaders gathering in the picturesque French town of Evian-les-Bains for the annual G7 summit. President Donald Trump arrived at the talks amid a swirl of diplomatic activity, with the situation in the Middle East dominating the agenda. French President Emmanuel Macron, hosting the summit, had organized the schedule to allow for extensive discussions on the Iran situation, the ongoing war in Ukraine, and growing trade tensions among Western allies. The summit venue, chosen for its scenic beauty and relative isolation, provided a stark contrast to the weighty matters under discussion. Leaders of the United States, United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Japan, along with European representatives, gathered for what was expected to be one of the most consequential G7 meetings in years. The traditional family photo of leaders showed smiles for the cameras, but the body language suggested the tensions that lay beneath the diplomatic niceties. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky joined the summit as a special guest, continuing his tireless diplomatic campaign to maintain Western support for his country's defense against Russian aggression. Zelensky's presence ensured that the war in Ukraine would receive significant attention, even as the Iran situation threatened to overshadow other agenda items. The Ukrainian leader was scheduled to hold bilateral meetings with each G7 leader, pressing his case for continued military and economic assistance. The summit agenda also included discussions on trade policy, climate change, and coordination on China policy. However, these items were expected to receive less attention given the pressing security crises demanding immediate focus. European leaders were particularly concerned about the potential implications of a U.S.-Iran deal for their own security relationships in the Middle East and for the future of the Iran nuclear agreement that European powers had worked to preserve. Even as diplomats talked in France, the war in Ukraine continued with devastating effect. Tuesday morning brought news of a dramatic Ukrainian drone attack on the Moscow oil refinery, one of the most significant strikes on Russian infrastructure since the war began. The refinery, which normally provides nearly half of the fuel supplied to Russia's capital city, erupted in flames following the long-range attack. Videos shared on social media showed massive plumes of black smoke rising over the Moscow skyline, visible from miles away. The attack represented a significant escalation in Ukraine's campaign to target Russian energy infrastructure. Ukrainian military officials had long argued that such strikes were legitimate acts of war aimed at degrading Russia's ability to sustain its military operations. The Moscow refinery was a particularly valuable target, both for its strategic importance and for the psychological impact of striking so close to the heart of Russian power. Russian officials condemned the attack as terrorism and vowed retaliation. The Russian Defense Ministry claimed that its air defense systems had intercepted most of the drones, but acknowledged that some had reached their target. The ministry did not provide casualty figures, though local reports suggested that several refinery workers had been injured in the explosions and subsequent fires. The timing of the attack, coming just one day after Ukraine officially began negotiations to join the European Union, was likely not coincidental. The EU accession talks, which opened in Luxembourg on Monday, represented a major diplomatic victory for Kyiv and a step toward Ukraine's long-stated goal of European integration. The process would take years and require extensive political and economic reforms, but the opening of formal negotiations was itself a powerful symbol of Europe's commitment to Ukraine's future. Back in the United States, the Federal Reserve announced its latest monetary policy decision on Tuesday afternoon. The Federal Open Market Committee voted unanimously, 12-0, to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 3.5 to 3.75%. The decision came as no surprise to market observers, who had widely expected the Fed to hold rates steady as it continued to monitor economic conditions. The Fed's statement accompanying the decision painted a picture of an economy that was performing reasonably well despite significant headwinds. Economic activity is expanding at a solid pace despite elevated uncertainty that is in part due to the conflict in the Middle East, the statement read. The committee noted that productivity growth and capital investment remain strong, and that job gains had kept pace with workforce growth, keeping the unemployment rate relatively stable. However, the statement also acknowledged that inflation remained above the Fed's 2% target. The committee attributed this, in part, to supply shocks that have driven price increases in certain sectors, including energy. The ongoing conflicts in the Middle East and Eastern Europe had contributed to volatility in global energy markets, with oil prices fluctuating significantly based on news from the war zones. These price movements had ripple effects throughout the economy, affecting everything from gasoline prices to the cost of manufactured goods. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell did not hold a press conference following this meeting, as is customary for some but not all FOMC meetings. However, in the written statement, the committee reiterated its commitment to achieving price stability while supporting maximum employment. The statement's language suggested that the Fed was prepared to hold rates steady for the foreseeable future, absent significant changes in economic conditions. Financial markets reacted calmly to the announcement, with major stock indices showing little movement. Bond yields remained relatively stable, and the dollar held its value against major currencies. The muted market reaction suggested that investors had fully anticipated the Fed's decision and were comfortable with the central bank's current policy stance. Tuesday also brought continued fallout from Monday's revelations about immigration policy discussions within the White House. Additional details emerged about the deportation of hunger strike leader Kion Shaquille Suaso from the Adelanto detention facility. Advocates released a timeline showing that Suaso had been moved through four different facilities in three states over the course of just 48 hours before being deported to Belize. The rapid transfers appeared designed to prevent Suaso's legal team from tracking his location and filing emergency motions to halt his deportation. Immigration attorneys described the practice as ICE shell game, where detained immigrants are moved frequently to frustrate legal representation and judicial oversight. While ICE maintained that transfers are sometimes necessary for operational reasons, the timing and circumstances of Suaso's deportation raised serious questions about the agency's motives. Meanwhile, at the Delaney Hall facility in Newark, the hunger strike entered its fourth week. Detained immigrants and their supporters held a vigil outside the facility, with family members sharing stories of their loved ones inside. Local elected officials, including Newark Mayor Ras Baraka, joined the vigil and called on ICE to negotiate with the strikers and address their concerns about facility conditions. Tuesday evening brought the excitement that Kansas City had been anticipating for months, the first World Cup match at Kansas City Stadium. Argentina faced Algeria in a Group C match that would help determine which teams advanced to the knockout rounds. The stadium was packed with 72,000 fans, creating an electric atmosphere that showcased Kansas City's passion for soccer. The match itself lived up to the hype. Argentina, despite being without some of its legendary players from previous tournaments, demonstrated why it remained one of the world's elite teams. The Argentines controlled possession for much of the match, their intricate passing and movement causing constant problems for the Algerian defense. Algeria, making its first World Cup appearance since 2014, showed moments of quality on the counterattack, but struggled to create clear scoring chances against Argentina's organized defense. The breakthrough came in the 34th minute when Argentine midfielder Enzo Fernandez curled a beautiful shot from outside the penalty area into the top corner of the net. The stadium erupted as Argentine fans celebrated, their blue and white flags waving throughout the stands. Algeria pushed forward in search of an equalizer, and the match opened up in the second half with both teams creating chances. Argentina sealed the victory in the 78th minute when substitute forward Julian Alvarez finished a swift counterattack, sliding the ball past the Algerian goalkeeper. The 2-0 victory put Argentina in a strong position in Group C and sent the massive Argentine contingent in the crowd into celebration. After the final whistle, players from both teams exchanged jerseys and embraced, displaying the sportsmanship that makes the World Cup special. The success of the match was about more than just what happened on the field. Kansas City had proven it could host a world-class sporting event with smooth operations, enthusiastic crowds, and a festive atmosphere throughout the city. Local officials were already looking ahead to the remaining five matches scheduled for Kansas City Stadium, confident that the city would continue to shine on the global stage. Wednesday, June 17, 2026, brought the news that diplomats and observers had been anticipating since Monday's hints from Vice President Vance. President Donald Trump signed a historic agreement with Iran aimed at de-escalating tensions and potentially ending the conflict that had threatened to engulf the entire Middle East. The signing ceremony, held at the Palace of Versailles during the G7 summit, represented one of the most significant diplomatic breakthroughs in decades. The agreement, formally titled the Memorandum of Understanding on Nuclear Activities and Regional Security, addressed several key issues that had been at the heart of U.S.-Iran tensions. According to the text released by the White House, Iran agreed to dilute its stockpile of highly enriched uranium to levels that would make it unsuitable for weapons development. In exchange, the United States would ease certain economic sanctions that had crippled Iran's economy for years. President Trump, speaking at a press conference following the signing, hailed the agreement as a major achievement. "This is a great deal, maybe the greatest deal in the history of deals," Trump said, employing his characteristic superlatives. "We've stopped Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, we've brought peace to a region that hasn't seen peace in a very long time, and we've done it through strength and smart negotiation." The agreement also addressed the situation in Lebanon, where Iranian-backed forces and Israeli military units had been engaged in a deadly conflict. Under the terms of the deal, Iran agreed to use its influence to facilitate a ceasefire and the withdrawal of its proxy forces from certain areas. In return, the United States would work with Israel to ensure that Israeli forces also withdrew from Lebanese territory, though the agreement acknowledged that this would require separate negotiations with the Israeli government. Perhaps most significantly for global energy markets, the agreement included provisions regarding the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow waterway through which approximately one-fifth of the world's oil supply passes. Iran agreed to guarantee freedom of navigation through the strait and to refrain from any actions that would impede commercial shipping. This commitment addressed one of the most serious concerns that had emerged during the conflict, as threats to close the strait had sent oil prices soaring and raised fears of a global energy crisis. The economic provisions of the agreement were complex and would be implemented in phases. Initially, the United States would unfreeze approximately $6 billion in Iranian assets that had been held in foreign banks. Additional sanctions relief would follow as Iran demonstrated compliance with the nuclear provisions of the agreement. Contrary to earlier reports in Iranian state media, the agreement did not include $300 billion in reconstruction payments from the United States. Instead, neighboring Gulf states, particularly Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, had pledged to contribute to reconstruction efforts in areas affected by the conflict. Wednesday also brought a major Supreme Court decision with far-reaching implications for the structure of the federal government. In a 6-3 ruling, the court granted President Trump the power to fire and replace commissioners at independent regulatory agencies without cause. The decision overturned more than 90 years of precedent that had insulated such agencies from direct presidential control. The case centered on Rebecca Slaughter, who had served as a commissioner at the Federal Trade Commission until President Trump fired her in March 2025. Slaughter challenged her removal, arguing that the statute creating the FTC specified that commissioners could only be removed for cause, meaning for specific reasons such as misconduct or neglect of duty. The Trump administration argued that such restrictions on the president's removal power violated the constitutional principle of executive authority. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts held that the president's constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed required the ability to remove executive branch officials at will. Roberts acknowledged that Congress had historically created independent agencies with some insulation from presidential control, but he argued that such arrangements were constitutionally suspect when they prevented the president from ensuring that officials were carrying out their duties properly. The decision had immediate practical implications. Commissioners at agencies including the FTC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, and the National Labor Relations Board would now serve at the pleasure of the president, fundamentally changing the nature of these institutions. critics warned that the ruling would politicize agencies that had been designed to operate with some degree of independence from partisan politics. However, in a separate ruling, also announced Wednesday, the Supreme Court reached a different conclusion regarding the Federal Reserve. In a 5-4 decision, the court held that Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook could remain in her position while challenging President Trump's attempt to fire her. Chief Justice Roberts, writing for a different majority coalition, distinguished the Federal Reserve from other independent agencies, noting that our nation's tradition of central banking, protected from political interference, justified different treatment. Roberts' opinion emphasized the unique role of the Federal Reserve in managing monetary policy and maintaining financial stability. He noted that central bank independence had long been recognized as crucial to preventing short-term political considerations from undermining sound economic policy. The opinion suggested that while the president had broad removal authority over most executive branch officials, the Federal Reserve's special status warranted continued protection from political interference. The two rulings, announced on the same day but reaching seemingly contradictory conclusions, left legal observers puzzled about the precise boundaries of presidential removal power. Former FTC Commissioner Alvaro Bedoya, who had been fired by Trump in 2025, offered a pointed critique. They're making clear that the Wall Street bankers, the central bankers, they deserve an independent, above-the-fray regulator. The rest of us schmucks get stuck with the loyalists. Wednesday's World Cup action featured matches in other host cities, but Kansas City remained abuzz with excitement from Tuesday's successful Argentina-Algeria match. The city was preparing for its next match on Saturday, when Ecuador would face Curaçao. Meanwhile, training sessions by the national teams based in Kansas City drew crowds of spectators eager to catch a glimpse of world-class players. In basketball news, anticipation was building for the NBA draft, scheduled for later in the month. Mock drafts and speculation dominated sports media coverage, with analysts debating which college and international players would be selected in the first round. The draft was expected to be particularly deep in talent, with several potential franchise-changing players available. Thursday, June 18, 2026, brought the first signs of the challenges that would face implementation of the U.S.-Iran agreement signed just a day earlier. Israeli military forces conducted airstrikes in southern Lebanon overnight, targeting what Israeli officials described as Iranian weapons depots. The strikes killed at least 7 people and wounded dozens more, according to Lebanese health officials. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi immediately condemned the strikes as a violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of the agreement signed in Versailles. Speaking to reporters in Tehran, Araghchi warned that continued Israeli military operations could undermine the entire diplomatic framework. "We have shown good faith by signing this agreement," Araghchi said. "We expect all parties to respect the commitments that have been made, and that includes ensuring that Israeli aggression ceases." The Israeli strikes highlighted a fundamental problem with the agreement. It was a bilateral deal between the United States and Iran, but its success depended on the actions of third parties, particularly Israel. The agreement included language about working toward a comprehensive ceasefire in Lebanon, but it did not bind Israel to any specific actions. Prime Minister Netanyahu had made clear that Israel would continue to operate according to its own security assessments, regardless of any U.S.-Iran understanding. The Trump administration found itself in the awkward position of trying to manage its relationship with Israel while also preserving the agreement with Iran. Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke by phone with both Israeli and Iranian officials, urging restraint and emphasizing the importance of giving the diplomatic process time to work. However, Rubio's task was complicated by the fact that many members of Trump's own administration, including Vice President Vance, had expressed skepticism about the Iran deal and strong support for Israel's position. On a different note, Thursday evening brought a special screening at the Sala Los Alamos Event Center in New Mexico. The venue hosted a showing of Copa 71, a documentary about the 1971 Women's World Cup held in Mexico City. The tournament, which drew large crowds and featured high-quality play, was later erased from official FIFA records and largely forgotten by the broader soccer world. The documentary, part of the venue's Parallel Cinema series, told the story through the voices of the players who participated in the tournament. These women, who had played before packed stadiums in Mexico City, watched as their achievement was systematically written out of history. FIFA, soccer's international governing body, did not officially recognize Women's World Cup competition until 1991, effectively denying the existence of the earlier tournament. The screening was particularly timely given that the Men's World Cup was currently taking place in North America. The contrast between the massive media coverage, corporate sponsorship, and official recognition of the men's tournament and the historical erasure of the women's tournament highlighted the gender disparities that have long plagued soccer and sports more broadly. The event, sponsored by CM Arborcare, was free and open to the public. Following the screening, there was a discussion about the history of women's soccer and the ongoing fight for equality in sports. Several attendees noted the irony that even as the women's game had grown tremendously in recent decades with professional leagues and increased media coverage, the pioneers who had played in 1971 remained largely unknown. Friday, June 19, 2026, marked Juneteenth, the federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. The day, which became a federal holiday in 2021, has taken on increased significance as debates over racial justice, voting rights, and the teaching of American history have intensified. This year's Juneteenth came at a moment when many of the issues the holiday represents remained deeply contested. Across the country, communities held celebrations that mixed joy and reflection. In cities large and small, there were parades, festivals, concerts, and educational programs. Many events emphasized African American culture, history, and achievement, providing spaces for Black communities to celebrate their heritage and resilience. Food vendors served traditional dishes, musicians performed, and families gathered to mark the occasion. However, civil rights organizations used the day to draw attention to ongoing challenges facing Black Americans. The NAACP issued a statement calling Juneteenth both a celebration and a call to action. The organization emphasized that while the holiday commemorates a crucial moment in American history, true freedom remains incomplete. Juneteenth marks the day when enslaved people in Texas finally learned of their freedom, more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, the NAACP statement read. That delay reminds us that freedom promised is not the same as freedom delivered. The NAACP specifically highlighted threats to voting rights as a contemporary parallel to the delayed freedom that Juneteenth commemorates. The organization pointed to recent Supreme Court decisions that had weakened the Voting Rights Act, state laws that critics argued made it harder for Black Americans to vote, and ongoing efforts to limit the political power of Black communities through gerrymandering and other means. We cannot celebrate Juneteenth while remaining silent about attacks on the voting rights that our ancestors fought and died to secure, the statement concluded. Native News Online, a publication focused on indigenous issues, published an editorial connecting Juneteenth to broader struggles against systemic racism. The piece, written by editor Levi Rickert, argued that the history of racial subordination in the United States encompasses multiple communities and takes multiple forms. Juneteenth reminds us that freedom delayed is justice denied, Rickert wrote, but we must also remember that the story of racial injustice in America includes not just slavery, but also indigenous dispossession, broken treaties, forced assimilation, and ongoing discrimination against Native peoples. The editorial called for solidarity among communities of color in confronting systemic racism. Rickert argued that while each community's history and experiences are distinct, there are common threads of resistance to oppression and demands for justice. The struggle for racial justice is not one story, but many stories, he wrote, yet they are connected by a common thread, the use of racial categories to deny people their fundamental rights and dignity. On Juneteenth, we should commit ourselves not just to remembering the past, but to building a future where all people are truly free. In Washington, President Trump issued a proclamation marking Juneteenth, though the statement was notably brief and avoided addressing contemporary racial justice issues. The proclamation acknowledged the historical significance of June 19, 1865, when Union soldiers arrived in Galveston, Texas, and informed enslaved people of their freedom. However, it did not mention ongoing debates over civil rights enforcement, voting rights, or other issues that civil rights organizations had highlighted. Several Democratic lawmakers held events at the Capitol, using the occasion to announce new legislative proposals aimed at addressing racial disparities in criminal justice, education, and economic opportunity. Representative Cori Bush of Missouri introduced the Juneteenth Justice Act, which would create a federal commission to study the lasting effects of slavery and make recommendations for remedies, including potential reparations. The bill had little chance of passage in the Republican-controlled House, but Bush argued that it was important to keep the conversation alive. Juneteenth is not just about what happened in 1865, Bush said at a press conference. It's about what's happening right now in 2026. It's about the fact that Black Americans still face discrimination in housing, employment, education, and the criminal justice system. It's about the fact that the wealth gap between Black and white families has barely narrowed in decades. True freedom means addressing these ongoing injustices. Friday saw Kansas City preparing for another World Cup weekend. The Ecuador-Curacao match scheduled for Saturday had generated significant interest, particularly among the large Ecuadorian community in the Kansas City area. Local restaurants were planning watch parties, and Ecuadorian flags were visible throughout neighborhoods with significant Latino populations. The economic impact of the World Cup was already exceeding projections. Hotels reported that visitors were staying longer than initially expected, with many using Kansas City as a base for exploring the region between matches. Restaurants and bars were seeing record business, and retail stores were selling World Cup merchandise as fast as they could stock it. The Kansas City Chamber of Commerce estimated that the tournament would generate more than $500 million in economic activity for the metropolitan area. Beyond the economic benefits, civic leaders emphasized the intangible value of hosting the World Cup. Kansas City was showcasing itself to a global audience, with images of the city's skyline, fountains, and enthusiastic fans being broadcast to hundreds of millions of viewers worldwide. The successful organization of the matches was enhancing the city's reputation and could lead to future opportunities to host major sporting and cultural events. Saturday, June 20th, 2026. Saturday saw continued Juneteenth celebrations across the country, but the weekend also brought protests focused on racial justice issues. In several major cities, demonstrators gathered to call attention to police violence, economic inequality, and threats to voting rights. In Minneapolis, where the murder of George Floyd in 2020 had sparked a national reckoning on race and policing, thousands gathered for a march from the site where Floyd was killed to the state capitol. The march, organized by a coalition of civil rights groups, called for further police reforms and for addressing the economic disparities that disproportionately affect Black communities. Speakers included family members of people killed by police, community organizers, and local elected officials. The Minneapolis march was peaceful, with police maintaining a low-profile presence. However, the event highlighted ongoing tensions over policing in the city. Despite reforms implemented after Floyd's murder, including changes to use of force policies and increased accountability measures.
Are you intrigued by true paranormal stories? Do you crave tales of the strange, the dark, and the mysterious?
Tune into our new podcast, Bump in the Night Chronicles, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Each episode dives into chilling paranormal phenomena and spine-tingling urban legends. From ghostly encounters to hair-raising myths, we explore the unknown. So if you're brave enough and not easily scared, subscribe now to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com for ad-free episodes.
Many community members argued that fundamental problems remained. The police department continued to face challenges in recruiting and retaining officers, particularly officers of color, and relations between police and some communities remained strained. In Atlanta, protesters gathered outside the state capitol to oppose recent voting law changes that critics argued would make it harder for Black Georgians to vote. The protesters, organized by the New Georgia Project and other voting rights organizations, called for federal legislation to protect voting rights and for the Justice Department to challenge state laws that they viewed as discriminatory. Georgia had been at the center of voting rights debates since the 2020 election, and the state's laws continued to generate controversy. Similar protests took place in other cities, including Houston, Philadelphia, and Oakland. While the specific issues varied by location, common themes emerged: demands for police accountability, economic justice, voting rights protection, and action to address systemic racism. The protests were generally peaceful, though there were isolated incidents of tension between protesters and counter-protesters in some locations. Conservative commentators criticized the protests, arguing that they presented an overly negative view of racial progress in America. Some argued that Juneteenth should be a day of celebration rather than protest, and that focusing on ongoing problems detracted from acknowledging how far the country had come since slavery. However, protest organizers rejected this framing, arguing that true celebration required honest acknowledgement of continuing injustices. Saturday evening brought another exciting World Cup match to Kansas City Stadium. Ecuador faced Curaçao in a Group A match that would help determine which teams advanced to the knockout rounds. Ecuador, a traditional South American soccer power, was heavily favored, but Curaçao, making its World Cup debut, was determined to prove it belonged on the world stage. The match drew a capacity crowd of 72,000, with a significant contingent of Ecuadorian fans creating a festive atmosphere. The crowd was treated to an entertaining match that showcased both teams' attacking abilities. Ecuador took the lead in the 23rd minute when striker Enner Valencia headed home a corner kick. The goal sent the Ecuadorian fans into celebration, their yellow jerseys creating a sea of color in the stands. However, Curaçao refused to be intimidated. The small Caribbean nation, with a population of just 160,000, showed remarkable spirit and organization. In the 41st minute, Curaçao equalized when midfielder Leandro Bacuna struck a powerful shot from distance that beat the Ecuadorian goalkeeper. The goal was Curaçao's first ever in World Cup competition, and the Curaçao players celebrated with unbridled joy. The second half was tense, with both teams creating chances. Ecuador's superior depth and experience eventually told, as substitutes made the difference. In the 67th minute, Gonzalo Plata restored Ecuador's lead with a clever finish. Ecuador added a third goal in the 84th minute through another substitute, Jordi Caicedo, sealing a 3-1 victory. Despite the loss, Curaçao's players left the field to a standing ovation from the crowd. Their performance had earned respect, and their historic first World Cup goal would be remembered by their small nation for generations. Ecuador's victory put them in a strong position to advance from Group A, while Curaçao would need results to go their way in their remaining matches to have any chance of progressing. The match further cemented Kansas City's reputation as an excellent World Cup host. The stadium operations were smooth, the crowd was enthusiastic and respectful, and the city's hospitality was evident in every aspect of the event. FIFA officials in attendance expressed satisfaction with how Kansas City was handling its hosting duties, and there was already speculation about the city's potential to host matches in future international tournaments.
Saturday also brought entertainment news, as Netflix announced a major content acquisition. The streaming giant had secured the rights to stream all films from A24, the acclaimed independent film studio known for artistic and critically praised movies. The deal, reportedly worth hundreds of millions of dollars, represented Netflix's continued effort to differentiate its content library from competitors. A24 had built a reputation for supporting innovative filmmakers and producing films that often garnered critical acclaim and awards recognition. Recent A24 films had won multiple Academy Awards, and the studio had become synonymous with a certain type of sophisticated, character-driven cinema. The Netflix deal would give the streaming service exclusive rights to A24's catalog, as well as first-window streaming rights to new A24 releases. The announcement was seen as a significant move in the ongoing streaming wars. As the streaming market had become increasingly crowded, with multiple services competing for subscribers, content differentiation had become crucial. Netflix's strategy of securing exclusive content from prestigious sources like A24 was aimed at attracting and retaining subscribers who valued quality over quantity. However, the deal also raised concerns among film purists who worried about the future of theatrical exhibition. A24 films had traditionally received theatrical releases, allowing them to build word of mouth and compete for awards that often require theatrical runs. The Netflix deal's terms regarding theatrical windows were not immediately clear, leading to speculation about whether A24 films would continue to receive significant theatrical releases or would move primarily to streaming. Sunday, June 21st, 2026, saw NBA draft prospects making final preparations for the draft, which was now just days away. The draft, scheduled for later in the week, would determine the futures of dozens of young players hoping to begin professional careers. Mock drafts and speculation dominated sports media, with analysts debating.
Welcome to Limitless Broadcasting Network. Limitless Broadcasting Network is a family-owned podcast and streaming platform dedicated to creating engaging programming for our audience. We produce a variety of shows, including podcasts, television series, movies, and documentaries. Here are some of the exciting podcasts we produce. The Pixie Dust Twins Podcast. You Can't Kill the Boogeyman Podcast. The Painful Truth of Living with Chronic Pain Podcast. Robbie Reviews Podcast, The Partner Complex Podcast. We also offer subscription podcasts such as The Secrets Uncovered, The Truth Behind the Lies Podcast, Bump in the Night Chronicles Podcast, Rant Radio Podcast, Hollywood Hustle Podcast, The Shows That Shaped Us Podcast, Limitless News Coverage Podcast, Strange World with Robert Podcast. You can find all podcast shows from the Limitless Broadcasting Network anywhere you get your podcasts. For ad-free episodes, subscribe now.
Which players would be selected in the top picks. This year's draft was considered particularly strong, with several players projected to be potential franchise cornerstones. Duke forward Cooper Flagg was widely expected to be the first overall pick, with teams at the top of the draft order reportedly eager to select the versatile forward. Other top prospects included French center Alexandre Sarr, USC guard Isaiah Collier, and UConn forward Stephon Castle. For the players, draft day would represent the culmination of years of work and the beginning of new challenges. The transition from college or international basketball to the NBA is notoriously difficult, with even top picks sometimes struggling to adjust to the speed, physicality, and complexity of the professional game. However, it also represents an opportunity to achieve dreams and to secure financial stability for themselves and their families. The draft would also be a crucial moment for NBA teams, many of which were hoping that the right draft pick could transform their fortunes. Teams at the bottom of the standings saw the draft as an opportunity to acquire young talent that could form the core of future championship contenders. Teams in the middle of the pack hoped to find players who could push them into playoff contention. Even contending teams were looking for draft picks who could contribute immediately or be developed into valuable rotation players. Sunday brought the biggest entertainment story of the day, and indeed of the entire week, the release of Echoes of Tomorrow, the highly anticipated science fiction film from director Denis Villeneuve. The film, which opened in theaters on Friday, June 21st, had dominated the box office throughout the weekend and was on track to have one of the biggest opening weekends of the year. Echoes of Tomorrow starred Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet in a story set in a future where humanity had developed the ability to communicate with parallel versions of themselves in alternate timelines. The film explored themes of choice, consequence, and identity, wrapped in Villeneuve's signature visual style. Early reviews had been overwhelmingly positive, with critics praising the film's ambitious storytelling, stunning cinematography, and powerful performances. The film's opening weekend box office was estimated at $142 million domestically, with international numbers pushing the worldwide total past $300 million. These numbers exceeded studio expectations and represented a significant success for Warner Bros., which had invested heavily in the production. The strong opening suggested that audiences remained hungry for original, thought-provoking science fiction when it was executed at a high level. As we close out this extraordinary week of June 15th to June 21st, 2026, we've witnessed history unfolding across multiple fronts. From the diplomatic breakthrough between the United States and Iran to the ongoing struggles for civil rights and justice at home, from the excitement of the World Cup to the cultural phenomenon of Echoes of Tomorrow, this week has reminded us of the
Hey everyone, I'm Ashley.
And I'm Sammy, and we are
the Pixie Dust Twins. Going through Disney withdrawal? Well, we have the cure with Disney-centered topics every week.
You can check us out on all podcasting platforms or go to limitlessbroadcasting.com for more info, merchandise, etc.
We hope to see you on the podcast, but make sure to bring some pixie dust and happy thoughts.
And aim for the second star on the right and straight on till you land on the Pixie Dust Twins podcast.
We'll see y'all real soon.
Complexity and interconnectedness of our world. The U.S.-Iran agreement signed in Versailles represents a potential turning point in Middle Eastern geopolitics, though significant challenges remain in implementation. The situation in Lebanon, the position of Israel, and the broader regional dynamics will continue to test the durability of this diplomatic achievement. We'll be watching closely in the weeks ahead to see whether the promise of peace can be translated into reality on the ground. Here at home, the debates over immigration policy, civil rights enforcement, and racial justice continue to define our national conversation. The revelations about discussions of suspending habeas corpus, the challenges to reparations programs, and the ongoing protests marking Juneteenth all highlight the unfinished business of American democracy. These are not abstract policy debates, but matters that affect real people's lives and futures. The World Cup has provided moments of joy and unity, reminding us of sport's power to bring people together across national and cultural boundaries. Kansas City has proven itself an excellent host, and the tournament has showcased the beautiful game at its highest level.
As the competition continues, we'll be following the drama on the field and the cultural impact off it. Echoes of Tomorrow has given us a cultural touchstone, a film that entertains while also challenging us to think about choice, consequence, and connection. In a moment when our society often feels fragmented, the film's exploration of communication across differences, even across parallel realities, feels particularly resonant. This has been Maya Sinclair, bringing you the Limitless News Coverage Podcast of the week that was. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more comprehensive coverage of the stories shaping our world. Until then, stay informed, stay engaged, and remember that understanding the news is the first step towards shaping the future. For more in-depth analysis and daily updates, subscribe to the Limitless News Coverage Podcast, available on all major podcast platforms. You can also follow us on social media for breaking news and behind-the-scenes insights into the stories we're covering. Follow us on Instagram at Limitless Broadcasting.
Thank you for tuning into the Limitless News Coverage Podcast. Your host and news correspondent is Maya Sinclair. This exclusive podcast can be found at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com. To enjoy ad-free episodes, make sure to subscribe. The podcast is edited by Robert Brooksby, who also handles the intro and outro production. Episode recording is done by Maya Sinclair. It's produced by 1950 Studios and distributed through the Limitless Broadcasting Network. You can catch this series and our other podcasts anywhere you get your podcasts. Remember to subscribe at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com for ad-free access.
Hey everyone, it's Albert Parker here. I'm the host of the new Hollywood Hustle podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Welcome to the show where we stop gawking at red carpets and start following the money. We dive deep into the financial secrets that keep Hollywood thriving. Not gossip, not just celebrity dirt, real structures, real cash flows, the corporate chess moves that decide what gets greenlit and what gets buried. Who actually owns Hollywood? Who makes the real money? And who's just along for the ride? So what makes Hollywood Hustle stand out? We don't just report headlines, we unpack them. Now how do you listen? Hollywood Hustle Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For ad-free episodes, be sure to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.